how do you see psychedelics now as a Christian? Because you were struggling to let go of it. You were in your story, you said it doesn't say anything about that in the Bible. Now you talked about pharmakia, but how do you make sense of that? I know that there's a lot of people that do psychedelics that are very against the Bible. I also know that there's a small group of Christians that are saying you can do psychedelics. With your experiences, what you believe now, how do you make sense of these things?
Yeah, so there's kind of multiple ways that I view psychedelics now. There is, you know, the more rooted in, because I believe that the Bible is our defining manual for all of creation, all of the world. So I believe that the Bible, I believe Jesus is God and that he rose from the dead to confirm himself as God, and that he affirmed the writings and the narratives within the Bible. So I take that as truth itself. And so as far as that lens from it, there is the scriptures on pharmakia. Now, here's the issue with the biblical texts in and us reading it from a modern lens is that these texts were for first century, well, more than first century, but specifically what I'm referring to is first century Jewish followers of Jesus, the rabbi Jesus. So this isn't necessarily coming from a standpoint trying to explain it to a modern mind and a modern Greek-shaped worldview. This is a very different worldview that they're approaching this, and they have different priorities. So drug use would not have been a common problem in early Jewish believers because that was not something they participated in. That was forbidden for them to participate in the same things, in the rituals and everything that the pagans would do all throughout the Old Testament. So this was not something that is a problem. That's where documents like the Didache come in. So the Didache is essentially a first century discipleship manual for bringing Gentiles, non-Jewish, or they call it the nations in the Bible sometimes, anybody that's non-Jewish that who want to follow the way. They would call it the way. Followers of the Messiah, Jesus Christ. Christ means Messiah, and which means King of Israel, also means anointed one. It has, you know, a very three-dimensional meaning to it. It means like a representation of the divine. So this manual, the Didache, specifically outlines things that the Hebrew scriptures and the epistles and the New Testament writings don't address in the same way. So the Didache talks about, hey, you have to stop doing rituals and witchcraft. You have to stop doing abortions. Like, it literally addresses that. You have to stop making potions. These are all the criteria. These are some of the criteria. It's very robust of being participating as a follower of the way, of the follower of the rabbi Jesus. And so in that sense, that's where I think a lot of people look in the scriptures are like, and they can justify, oh, well, it doesn't specifically say that. Well, in Galatians, it talks about pharmakia, which the definition of that is to take a substance to invoke a spiritual experience. And, you know, in every culture that has witch doctors and things like this, they're using potions. They're using psychoactive psychedelic substances for their rituals. This is a very common thing across history that these things can't just be used in isolation. They are tied to a history of ritualistic and what I see as evil demonic uses. So that would be my primary view of it. Now, something like LSD was synthesized in the lab. So I believe that there's a real spiritual realm, and that depending on how we orient our life and our heart towards Jesus as God, who is alive today and can guide us through his Holy Spirit, or away from that, there is other beings that will willfully guide us places and to do things. So I'm not sure if LSD specifically was given by some type of spiritual being and that knowledge of how to create it was, but there was a theory that I heard recently about marijuana specifically, and I don't know if this even has any actual legitimate historical relevance, but it's something to at least kind of contemplate. There's this saying that a lot of people, Christians who want to smoke marijuana, say, which is, oh, well, God gave us it. Every plant is good for us to use. Well, we know that not to be true, because there's there's a lot of ways you can use everything God gave you in a way that's bad. You know, there's plenty of ways. We can think of a lot of ways that the things that we have can be used in wicked ways. But there is this theory that plants have been altered after the fall of man, where whether it's witches or spiritual beings or what, could have actually genetically modified in some way or impacted these plants to where they're not what they originally were. I'm not sure how much legitimacy that has or if that even matters. But that whole argument, that is a way to justify what we know to be true already, is not that strong of an argument, because there's plenty of things where we could be doing something completely gross and immoral with things that God has given us.
Right. I think it's very easy to find examples of that for all of us.
Yeah.
And we just finished the recording, but when we talked, there was a story that I thought you were going to get into because I knew that you had experienced it, and somehow we skipped over, but I wanted to give the people an idea of actually what happened. Your first spiritual encounter, I don't know when it happened, but it was with a few friends, and I think one of them got demon possessed, and I think that might have been the first time that you tried psychedelics. Do you mind sharing that? Because I think that was actually a part of the story that was interesting, so I wanted to just get that story from you.
Yeah, and I will preface, I don't share these things a lot, because I don't know, there's a scripture that says, whatever is lovely, whatever is pure, set your mind on these things. And mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time in my past contemplating and thinking through these things, and it really bothered me for a long time. And so these stories are a darker part of my life that I'm not proud to say that I experienced. So they make for interesting stories, of course, and there's learning lessons from them. But I will kind of give the challenge to people, is like, you don't have to experience this level of darkness to like be able to find the truth. And so some people think you have to go any which direction to find truth and, you know, what is real in life. And it's just, it's not worth it. So that's just how I'll preface it. But yeah, so I had a buddy, and he was what I describe as the definition of temptation. He could convince you to want to do, not just convince you to do, convince you to want to do anything he wanted to do. And at one point, I would have considered him one of my best friends. And he had gotten a hold somehow of pure LSD, and got some of our buddies together and said, hey, I want to do this. And I had felt like I just didn't want to go, like, the whole time. And I was kind of like looking for a way not to go. But I was curious. I'm like, no, maybe I should take a step into this. I had been smoking weed, and it gave me ideas and things like that. Maybe I am curious. And I do think curiosity can be, for lack of better words, demonic. Like, I know demonic's not the best word, but people listening will know what I mean by that. Is like, in definition, demonic is, you know, specifically, you know, what seems like spirits that come from Nephilim, dead Nephilim, but not necessarily spiritual beings. So, but it's a good comprehensive word for evil.
Yeah, you know? Evil. You could replace it with evil, and evil yeah. curiosity.
Yeah, like evil curiosity that I think people develop over time sometimes, that can get you into a lot of trouble. And so I went to the parking lot that we're meeting up, and it's like, he goes, hey, this is your last chance. Do you want to come? I'm like, oh, I don't know. And he's like, you should come, and all this stuff. And so eventually I'm like, okay, I agree. And so we went to camp, and I actually know the park. It was at Emma Long Park in Austin. And we had hiked there before, and there was a place that wasn't an official campsite where you go up and we coined the name because we would, you know, we played disc golf and we'd smoke and like prior, well, this is when I was in high school, and we'd come up with little names and stuff, you know, for things and little things that unified us as a friend group. And so we're like, oh, this is Hollywood Hills, you know, and because it was like a cliff that overlooked, you know, Town Lake and some other, or Lake Austin and some other parts of the city. And so we decided to go there to trip to go and experience this substance. And what I did a lot of study before, because I'm like, I want to make sure that I don't die from this. I want to make, you know, so I'm on the internet researching. And I guess I didn't research enough because I didn't realize how important it is to have, you know, what they say is like a sitter, someone that is sober, to make sure nothing crazy happens when you're doing these nuts kind of drugs, like, you know, on the side of a cliff. And so not just, so there's, you know, there's all types of stories of people jumping out windows and doing crazy stuff and dying because they have no one to help them. And so I think it's insane to do these things to begin with now, but you know, I was young and dumb, and we all take, well, everyone except for me takes two tabs of pure LSD. I said, I want to take one. And so I was the most sober there, but still not sober. And I wanted to kind of discover the answers of the universe. That was why I wanted to do it at the time. And I was sitting in my chair and, redact that name. my friend came over to me. He's like, hey, I need your help. I'm like, don't leave me alone. Like, I don't want any of the bad vibes or anything. And he's like, no, really, I need your help. They're not doing okay. And so, my two other friends that were with us had torn the tent down, essentially, just like kind of not settling down, kind of becoming out of their mind. And, you know, maybe roughly an hour later, it started to really get dark. My friend, let's call him Sam. Sam, for lack of better explanation or view, and obviously my perception was skewed at this time, but there's absolutely clear distinctions between what was real and what wasn't. He got demon possessed and like hunched over back, like screaming, looking like vicious in his, like towards us. And basically we had to hold him down. We thought he was going to like jump off the cliff. He was doing crazy stuff. And so we ended up holding him down all night, like holding him pretty much, you know, for 6 hours. It was one of the most miserable experiences I ever went through. So after he had settled down, we were all sitting in tables, and it was like his brain was rewired. He would like sit in the chair, like this camping chairs, and then would jump on the ground and like rock, like with his knees and his arms, rock back and forth. And he'd look at us, and it was like it was like empty space in his head or something. And he goes, "Oh, dang it! Hold on." He said, "Sam, run, skip, jump. I run, skip, jump," and it would just like rock back and forth. And I'm just sitting here like, what is happening to him? You know, and this is my first time ever experiencing this. So I'm just like, man, what have I gotten myself into? This is crazy. And, you know, while we were holding him down, it's funny because there's glimpses of my faith that would pop up through these times. We were holding him down and I'm like praying to God. I'm like, God, if you get me out of this, I will never do anything like this again. That's literally what I said. And so that's a common thing for people, is promising God things that they don't keep. So I didn't end up keeping that, unfortunately. But there was still that, like, I knew at the end of the day, I was going to go to God, you know, regardless of how I wanted to see and perceive reality, that I was going to go to God. And so the morning comes and we're rolling out of that campsite. And I remember there was like a shift on my life. And maybe this started that whole, you know, demon stuff from the peyote later on started back then, because I remember there was a dark cloud. Like it was like, I was just depressed after that. And we went to school, and Sam had become a different person. So I went and talked to him in the hallway. I'm like, "Hey, Sam, like, what's going on?" And he's just like, "Hey." And it's like different personality completely. And so that freaked me out. And I go over to my other friend, who was the one who convinced us all to do this. And I go, have you seen, like, he's not the same. And he just looks at me. He's like, "Who cares? Like, that's not me. That's not you. Why does it matter?" And at that point, I'm just like, what the, like, you really don't care that his brain is like not even there anymore? Like, and so I had ended up talking to after. And so he was still able to communicate, but he was like no personality anymore. None of his like things that made him unique and joyful were there anymore. And he told me that he relived his birth. He relived his parents' divorce, every traumatic moment of his entire life he experienced. That's what he said. It was like a carousel of puddles that would suck him in and to the memory. And then he would have to re-experience this thing. And I'm like, if anything's demonic, that is it. You know, I hear these stories of people doing ayahuasca. They're like, it unlocked this new part of me and healed my trauma and all this stuff. I'm like, yeah, after the common experience of a serpent climbing inside of your body in this experience, I'm like, how do you not clear? And that's where the deception comes in, because literally the name ayahuasca is after the serpent goddess or whatever.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure something like that. Fact check me if someone's on here. There's some type of name associated with the actual serpent that will show up in its common experiences. But at the very least, what I do know is the common experience is that it'll either enter through your chest, your mouth, your eyes, ears. And people always see these serpents going in them. And then they're like a better person after that. And I go, what could be more clear? That is like something evil happening to you, that snakes are climbing into you. And so, yeah, when I think about these things, I have clarity now, but you know, as a young kid, you're just kind of curious. And the problem was I didn't have anybody to help me understand these things. And so what I hope to do with my sons is help them understand how to make godly decisions. Not just tell them, hey, like, you know, at certain ages, you have to say, hey, don't, you're not allowed to go in the street. They might not understand the implications of how they could get hurt by a car in the street, but you do. And then you can correct them if they break that, so that they begin to learn. But as they grow, you start to help them understand, oh, this is why you weren't allowed to go into the street, because you can get hurt by cars that are passing by. Right. And so you start to help your sons build up this wisdom of how to make decisions, not necessarily determining what decisions they're supposed to make at all costs, because then you can get some type of rebellion attitude and stuff like that. So I hope to bring to my sons and my daughters a sense of a moral framework to understand reality through the lens of the scriptures. And because you can grow up in church, I know this is a common testimony, and not have any real guidance from the family. And so I think it's a common thing, especially in our modern day, to like export or I guess import, I guess however you look at it, but give up teaching responsibility to other people of your kids, whether that's the schooling system or the children's church pastor and stuff like that. But it's our primary responsibility of the people who brought life into this world to help them understand truth and how to live by what is good. Because the common misconception is that God gives you rules so you can have no fun, but it's not that. He's telling you a description of reality that will lead to death. It says sin leads to death.
God is putting fences next to the cliff. And we're like, how dare would he put fences there? I don't want to jump out. That's essentially what he's doing. But I wanted to get that story from you because I think your experiences on psychedelics didn't fully encapsulate the fullness of your story in this specific aspect. Because I wouldn't say a lot, but I see some Christians get deceived or get tempted by psychedelics. And with your experience with the peyote, it wasn't fully clear. We know there was you seem to be convinced that there was a demon after. How did it get there? It's a little unclear, right? But in this case, it's super clear. This guy got possessed because of the LSD. Now, how that works specifically, did it affect other people? I don't have an answer. I don't think you have an answer. But clearly, this guy got possessed and got affected for a long, I don't know if he like eventually fully gained his mind, but for a long time, at the very least, affected by this. And it's one of the warning signs that we need to take seriously. And so if anyone watching is interested in that, that's your sign. Don't do it. And if you know people that are interested, this is the kind of things that you have to tell them. Because again, this is right now what we're talking about is the fence in front of the cliff that God has put, because we don't want you to jump over the cliff and essentially, you know, do things that could have repercussions for the rest of your life. So thank you for sharing that. I appreciate it.